We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Montana State Athletics Bobcat Insider Podcast. This is your home for all things Montana State Athletics.
Thanks for tuning in to the only podcast dedicated to all things Montana State University. From football to golf to cross country and volleyball, we've got you covered, whether you're listening online at msubobcats.com or subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. We're glad you found us. I'm Jason Alvin, your host for this episode of the Bobcat Insider. And this week, we touch base on the Montana State Bobcats homecoming weekend as Director of Athletics Leon Costello announced that the Bobcats have reached their fundraising goal of $18 million for Phase 1 of the 20-year master plan for athletics. Phase 1 will consist of the Bobcat Athletic Complex, which will be housed at Bobcat Stadium and be the new home for Bobcat football, while the Academic Excellence Center will be housed inside the Brick Breeden Fieldhouse. Zach Mackey and I caught up with Costello during halftime of the homecoming game against Sacramento State to get his thoughts about the fundraising efforts being finalized. As we're joined by Director of Athletics Leon Costello. And Leon, yesterday the news broke that finally, not only did Montana State punch it across the goal line here before half, but the Bobcat Athletics as a whole punched it across the goal line with the final donations coming across for Phase 1. What does that mean to you and this university? Because this was your vision 4 years ago when you signed on as athletic director.
First of all, I think I need the countdown in my headset so I'm not talking when you guys are coming back on the air. But it means everything. I think it paints a great picture of what's going on campus. And under the great leadership of President Rodad Cruzado, I mean, you see what's happening on campus. And we talk a lot about it. It was kind of felt like it was our turn, right? And I just feel I'm so happy for the student athletes. I'm so happy for the coaches that will benefit from this, because it truly does match our mission and our vision, which is building facilities, championship facilities, which will develop them into the best athletes, the best students, best people that they can be. And this facility will benefit all of our student athletes, all of our coaches, and that was why we started with it. And so it's always good to get across the goal line, the finish line, But, you know, the work never stops, so now we've got to build it, right?
Well, phase two is next here. But you talked about getting the shovels in the ground and how it benefits all student-athletes. It's not just a football complex. Granted, that's going to be what a lot of the focus is on, but it's going to allow the opportunity for expanded academic resources up in the Brick, Reed, and Fieldhouse for all student-athletes, bigger training rooms and weight rooms for all student-athletes, so there's not 85 football guys in there where you're trying to get a workout if you're a skier or a women's basketball player. So it just really does help everyone in this process.
It does. I mean, when you can double your spaces, so you double a weight room and you double the athletic training room and you can then see those student athletes at better times. We talk a lot about letting our student athletes be students, and it's hard for them if they are all their time is dedicated to athletics, and whether you're in the training room or the weight room or you're traveling, things like that. This will allow them to condense their day and give time back to them. So the three things I think that we forget about all the time are: how do we eat? Do we give them enough time to study, and getting proper sleep? I know we have people in this room. I know I didn't go to sleep at good times when I was in college, but we need to be able to condense their day so we can help them develop. And it's really about supporting them, working with their coaches. But what I love about it was a collaborative effort, working with the coaches and student athletes to see what was going to be most beneficial. And phase one was what came out of it.
And Leon, while we're over here at Bobcat Stadium for phase one, what exactly is going to be on the other side of the scoreboard exactly? Can you walk us through exactly how that's going to set up?
Yeah, so if you look at the blockhouses there, it'll be about 10 feet behind there, and it's a 40,000 square foot, two-story building. If you think of it, it's basically all student-athlete services on the first floor, coaches' offices, meeting rooms, team rooms on the second floor, and when they're here at practice, they go right off the field, they can go shower, do their thing, and all of a sudden they have film uploaded, ready to go in the team in their meeting rooms, just like that. And so you're not walking across Kagi, you're not walking back to the field house having to shower, it's all done right here. And and I think track, especially in the spring with the track being, you know, behind the football stadium, they'll use that weight room a lot in the spring. Is they'll probably work out there and then go train at the track. And it really does, it will just open up so much more space. But I do have to say, I'm so proud of our donors, I'm so proud of our fans. They were the ones that stepped up and really believed in this mission and in the vision of this project. And we couldn't have done it without them. And so so happy and love going and seeing and talking with people that really want to make a difference in our student-athletes' lives.
Costello wasn't the only one to give his thoughts on the upcoming project, as head football coach Jeff Choate thinks Phase 1 is a game-changer for Montana State Athletics.
One of the primary reasons I wanted to talk today is I wanted to kind of address the announcement that was made after the first quarter of the game on Saturday in regards to the facility in the north end zone. And, you know, it's been a culmination of a lot of hard work. I think one of the things that stood out to me when I got here, one of the ironic things is when I interviewed for the job, they never brought me on campus. I'd been in this building one time in 2003. When I walked back into it after I got the job, my very first day on the job, nothing had changed, nothing. The paint was the same, the carpet was the same, the chairs were the same. And so it had been a number of years before anything had been done. And so, you know, we made it a mission to try to, you know, put a little lipstick on the pig and clean up our offices a little bit. But the reality is, when you look at 350 student athletes in this space, and there had been, you know, what we're sitting in now obviously was an addition that was done in the late 90s, but it's just not adequate. And especially when you look around the country and you look at places like James Madison and North Dakota State and in our own league now, Weber State with a new facility, and the arms race that's taken place. Cal Davis is investing $40 million in a new facility. Eastern Washington has announced a new project. The University of Montana has added to their facilities. And so in order for us to continue to compete at the level that I think the expectation is in this program, we had to make an investment in facilities, and not just for football, really for our athletic department as a whole. You walk through our weight room right now, and the good news is we've got a lot of stuff in there, and there's a lot of people taking advantage of it. The bad news is there's not any room for people. And our training facility, I mean, I'm always amazed at the job that our support staff does here. I really am. I mean, I tip my hat to Alex Wilcox and his staff and Rob Higgs and his staff. And if there's anybody that deserves to have a better, more adequate space, it's probably Rob Higgs after being here for 27 years and kind of laboring in obscurity, so to speak. But they do a tremendous job. And I think our job as leaders, whether that be our administration across campus with President Cruzado, Terry Leese and that crew, or within athletics with Leon Costello and you know, our other head coaches, is to figure out how do we make this the best it can be for our kids. And when the decision was made that this was the project that we were going to move forward with, there was a lot of pushback initially saying, hey, we need an indoor. I don't disagree with that. I don't. But being a team player, I knew that the most important thing we needed to do was to add space for all of our student athletes. And this project does that. And it allows us to move up our primary football operations to kind of its more natural home across the street over there. It eliminates one of the things that they talk a lot about with student athletes is how do you give them back time? And I just think about the time that it takes us to prepare for practice every day. Whether that's, you know, and we've got a transition, it's a quarter mile walk for us all the way over, all the way back every day. And it's not just us. I mean, Rob and his crew have got to move basically a satellite training room over there every morning. And we move a satellite weight room over there every morning, and then we haul it back. And it is a, you know, it's a major operation. It's not moving 10 or 15 people. It's moving 100 plus people over there every morning. And we juggle around our position meetings and our special teams meetings. You know, this week is a bye week, and it worked out great. I think it's awesome that we've got Luke Combs coming to Bozeman. But had it not been on a bye week, you know, we would have been kicked out of this space and had to move over to the stadium. And what that means for us is all of our hardwired stuff in terms of our teaching tools for film and whatnot, that means we've got to surge that stuff. And if it doesn't surge right, then you're just kind of at the mercy. All right, we're going to go do a walkthrough. And I give our kids a lot of credit. They've never complained. They, you know, regardless of the weather, regardless of what we've got to do, our coaching staff. And so I'm just excited because I think this is something that is going to move our athletic department forward in a really positive way and provide the type of facilities that will allow us to continue to attract really high quality young men and young women into our programs. And so it's going to alleviate a lot of stress, but it's also going to create new opportunities. And I think that's part of a growing athletic department. Now the new challenges that are now on the horizon is how do we staff that new facility? That's going to require, in addition to perhaps the training room in terms of their personnel, the weight room in terms of their personnel, equipment room in terms of their personnel. And so it's going to allow our athletics department to grow organically because of the need to staff these new areas. And so I think that's going to be huge. I mean, I noticed that the University of Montana announced a locker room project for their basketball. Well, that's now something that we can talk about because in 2021, when we move out of here, there's an entire locker room space that's now been created that can be used for enhancing our existing programs, facilities as well. And so I think it's a win-win. I can't say enough about the support of this community. It was really more of a grassroots deal. We had 500 separate donors that contributed to this project. I don't know that happens very often. Usually you're leaning on one or two big hitters, and we certainly had some amazing people step forward and make major contributions to this. But I think there's a lot of people that have skin in the game here. And I think that speaks to the pride and commitment of Bobcat Nation, this community rallying around and recognizing the importance of providing better space for our student athletes. And I'm really proud to be a part of that in a small way. You know, maybe this I had to be the squeaky wheel sometimes. I know it's not always fair to ask people in different roles to step out and pound the table, so to speak. But I was fine doing it, because I really believed that fighting for what was right for our student athletes needed to be done. And behind the scenes, we had a ton of support from our administration. And you know, I'd tell Leon, hey, I'm gonna bark today. And you go, all right, go ahead. You know, and hopefully that in a small way was able to push this forward. So excited about that. And I know, obviously, coming on the heels of a tough loss on Saturday, that maybe takes a little bit of the shine off of that announcement.
While the news of phase one of the athletics master plan broke Friday afternoon, the Bobcats had the business of the homecoming football game to prepare for, as the surging Sacramento State Hornets paid a visit to Bozeman on a beautiful October afternoon in the Treasure State. The Hornets were 3-2, but coming off their first win against a ranked FCS opponent since 2012, as they rolled into Bozeman riding high off that victory against Eastern Washington. Sacramento State jumped out to the early 7-0 lead against the 6th-ranked Bobcats as Kevin Thompson rushed in from 7 yards out to open the scoring. Montana State would answer the scoring drive of the Hornets with one of their own, as once again it was Travis Johnson supplying the fireworks for MSU as he broke through the line to score from 17 yards out. Lane Sumner, the back end motion. Johnson fakes it to him. He's going to cut it up. Now cuts outside. He's at the 10. He's at the 5. Great block by Tucker Rovick. And Travis Johnson is into the end zone for Montana State. A 17-yard touchdown run for the senior from California. After evening the score at 7, the Bobcats would struggle to get off the field, as on the ensuing drive, the Hornets converted a pair of third downs to take a 14-7 lead and then stretched their lead to 21-7 on the next offensive series after they converted a fourth down and 7. Trailing by 14 and looking for some life before the end of the half, the Bobcats went 77 yards and scored on a 6-yard Troy Anderson touchdown run on fourth down with just 15 seconds remaining in the first half. Heavy package again for Montana State. They're going to snap it. Troy Anderson has it. Anderson breaks outside. Anderson has the edge. He fights towards the goal line. Touchdown, Troy Anderson. Pure speed there from the junior from Dillon, Montana. With the score 21-14 at the break, the Bobcats would need to stop the Hornets out of the gate of the second half. But Sacramento State had other ideas. They took the opening kick of the second half 75 yards in 11 plays to regain a 2-score lead at 27-14. On the ensuing possession, the Bobcat offense would gain a couple first downs, but a sack of Tucker Robig would force a Jared Padmos punt. The senior from Boulder, Montana, pinned the Hornets at their own 6-yard line to start their drive. Kevin Thompson and the Hornets offense weren't fazed as they went 94 yards to go up 34-14. Montana State had been in this position before, trailing by 21 to Northern Arizona, and the Cats seemed to seize momentum at the start of the fourth quarter when Tyrell Thomas intercepted his first career pass to keep the Hornets out of the end zone. Thompson looking for the end zone, and that is intercepted. The first career pick by Tyrell Thomas. And there you have it, Zach, the momentum changer that the Bobcats needed. With Big Mo in their favor, the Montana State Bobcats would open up the offensive playbook and hit Kevin Cassis with a couple of deep balls to set themselves up inside the Hornet 10-yard line. But then disaster struck as Montana State would fumble not once, but twice inside the 5-yard line, and the Hornets kept the Cats off the board and still led by 20. Montana State would have a couple more opportunities to put points on the board than in the fourth quarter, but again, the Hornet defense was up to the challenge as the Hornets held the Bobcats out of the end zone on a 4th-and-9 play from the 13-yard line. Montana State would tack on a late touchdown after an 11-play drive ended in a Kevin Cassis touchdown for the second consecutive game, but it was too little, too late for Montana State. Rovig looking for Cassis on the fade. Cassis goes up and hauls it down for a Montana State touchdown. What a catch by Kevin Cassis. Montana State would fall for the first time since the season opener against Texas Tech, 34-21, and snap the Bobcats' 5-game win streak and dropped the Cats to 2-1 in Big Sky Conference play. These were the post-game comments from head coach Jeff Choate after the loss against the Hornets.
Coach, got that interception in the third quarter, drove it right down there. That looked like he had some momentum there, just couldn't quite get it in.
Yeah, that was kind of the tail of the tape. I mean, compliments to Sacramento State. I feel like they beat us on both sides of the line of scrimmage, something that, you know, we've clearly hung our hat on around here. And our inability to win those short yardage situations was a big factor in the game. And like I said, I mean, I think very good football team today. They executed at a high level. We did not in really any phase, in my opinion, up to our capability.
Tough time getting them off the field on third down.
Yeah, no question. I think that was a huge issue in the game. Got them off schedule a couple of times, and they were a step ahead of us, quite honestly. Every time we played man, they had a little pick route to get a guy open, and every time we played zone, they had the right call, and so you got to compliment them. And I think there were some things that we left out there, certainly, but we were beat by a better team today. There's no question about that. I don't think that's not the issue.
Why do you think it was kind of difficult to get a pass rush established today?
Well, they do a great job getting the ball out fast, you know, and a lot of their stuff is RPO, and so that was one of the things they executed at a really high level. Every time we went into a dime package, those guys would start sneak down thinking they had to defend the run, and he did a nice job of riding the RPO, and he was very accurate when he threw the ball. When we blitzed, it was mostly rundown pressure to try to get them off schedule, and really they don't give up a lot of sacks anyway. I mean, that's something, because they do get the ball out so quickly, it's a little bit of an exercise in futility sometimes, bringing a lot of pressure against this group.
Coach,
played the run pretty well in the first half. In the second half, they got a little bit of a QB run going. Yeah. Did you want the ball in his hands? Or how did
well, I think, you know, they did a nice job of the QB run into the boundary. Was something that was giving us some problems. And there were some formational things that they did to us, and some things in terms of alignment that we needed to clean up. And we actually had a couple pressures called into it and didn't execute them a couple times. And so that's just something we've got to do better as coaches, is making sure that we have answers for that. You know, it's funny because, you know, that's now our resume. So we're going to see those things again.
Why do you think their quarterback just overall was just so effective?
I think he's a really good player. He's played a lot of football. He's a mature guy, veteran guy. I think the scheme fits him very well, because he's a capable runner and an accurate passer, and they have a lot of weapons. I mean, I think that, you know, as I told you guys all week, this is a really good football team. And as I said, compliments to Sacramento State. I think that they outplayed us in all three phases today, and that would include quarterback play. And so, you know, we've got some work to do.
Dotson, number 33, what kind of problems did he present out there?
I think it was a lot of matchup things that we had issues with. When we were playing man-to-man, they did a great job of, you know, knowing that we were in man, and we had a linebacker that was covering him, and he's a fast guy, and he's a really good football player. And so they got him into some scheme matchups that were, you know, advantageous for them.
But they ran so many different concepts on offense. Was there anything new that you didn't see, or was it just the execution?
You know, the wide delay that they scored the touchdown on, we hadn't seen that. But other than that, you know, a lot of – and the Q run in the boundary, that was something they'd shown a little bit of it. They hadn't really majored in it. And so that was probably – those two wrinkles were things that maybe we hadn't seen a ton on film.
What do you think is just going to be kind of your focus going into the bye week?
Improve. You know, I mean, I think that's always – you know, it's got to be a state of constant improvement. I think that you know, we've worked out a way to win the last couple weeks, and we got behind in this game and got exposed a little bit. And that's something that, you know, I think we've known that we can't spot teams' points and win games. And maybe this is the wake-up call we needed. I think there were some things to build on. I thought Tucker operated our two-minute stuff late in the game. That's some stuff to build on there. But that might be the only bright spot, to be honest with you. I mean, we did not play well today, and that's my responsibility as a head coach, and we'll definitely improve that. Unfortunately, we got to live with it for 2 weeks now. And so we've got an opportunity to go back to the drawing board and figure out what works for us and execute at a higher level the next opportunity we get to compete.
Is there anything else in game planning that you wish you had done differently?
I think there's always going to be things that you like and don't like when you come out, of whether you're successful or not. And clearly there were some things today that you know, we probably should have emphasized less and or more, but that's always going to be the case.
Third down, it seemed like you guys got some third and longs with the offense where it currently is right now. What's challenging about those third and longs? How do you hope to improve those?
Well, what was challenging was their pass rush. And, you know, like I said, these guys have really good talent, and they get after the quarterback. And so anytime you're behind the sticks against this group, you're gonna have some of those issues. And even when we were in max protection, we weren't able to hold up, and that was something that was problematic. But, you know, anytime you're behind the sticks and in our style of offense, that's not going to be good for you.
The Bobcat football team wasn't the only team in action this past weekend, as the Montana State volleyball squad went on one of the toughest road trips in the Big Sky Conference, as they went to Flagstaff, Arizona, and Cedar City, Utah, to take on Northern Arizona and Southern Utah. This Bobcat team continues to make noise in the Big Sky Conference as they knocked off Northern Arizona, the defending Big Sky champion and preseason favorite, in their first 5-set win of the year. The momentum of that victory was short-lived, however, as the Cats were dispatched in 4 sets in Cedar City by the Southern Utah Thunderbirds. For those two matches, Alyssa Rizzo was named the Big Sky Defensive Player of the Week after tallying 61 digs in the road matches. It was the second time Rizzo has earned the conference honor, and head coach Daniel Jones broke down his weekend and his team's performance.
Recap from the weekend, obviously great occasion being able to knock off NAU at NAU. My understanding is it's been a long time. Was it two? Tom, you got the number for me? What year that last time we beat them
06.
Down? 06 was the last time we beat them down there. So just, again, I mean, this team just amazes me with their grit, determination, the toughness they have in those moments. I think end of the fourth set, we saw they had set point a couple of times, and we fought back, I think, up 24-21 or 24-20, and we were able to get on a run and stretch it out. And I think we're unlucky at that point not to take the match in four. And then again in the fifth set, they had match point, and we came back and put the pressure on them and were able to run over them in there at the end. So just thrilled for the team they were able to do that. And there's some circumstances that outside of our control with a bus where we actually had to walk back to the hotel after the match. So it was a bit of a letdown after the match that we're walking, and it was about 20 degrees. It was freezing in Flagstaff, and we're walking back to the hotel, but we're all in pretty good spirits, so it was fun. It would have been a lot harder walk if we had lost, but yeah, it was a great occasion. And then obviously long trip over to SCU. SCU is a new team. I'm trying to think as I was walking up here, how many of the girls that played against us on Saturday afternoon were in their starting lineup last year, and I would hazard a guess one, maybe two. So it's a brand new team, good coaching staff doing a great job, and you know, we had a good meeting this morning with the leadership group, just figuring out you know, where we tripped up over ourselves, really, because we didn't play well on Saturday afternoon. SCU played really well, and you know, we were caught out, and I just think it's a little bit of a come down after NAU, and that's a maturity, a growth thing, and it's a great lesson to learn at week three in conference play, and we still have a number of weeks to go to make that mental adjustment. So yeah, that's kind of the recap from the weekend. So I got lots of stories, most of them are off the court.
What do you say just about this week's matchups?
This week, I put Weber State in to win the conference in the pre-match preseason poll. I think they're the best team in the conference on paper. I got to dive into the film a little bit more, figure out what's going on for them, because they're not performing at the level that they want to or are capable of. So we're very conscious of them coming in. They're going to be a very hard match, and you know, I got a lot of respect for Jeremiah and what he does there. He's got all the talent that he needs to be very successful, and so yeah, I just my thing is we've got to be prepared. We've got to go out with our preparation and handle what we can on our side of the court. I think Saturday, Idaho State, Sammy, I know Sammy really well, the new head coach at Idaho State. We're in the Pac-12 together. She was at Arizona State, and then she was at Utah State for a couple of years, so I know her really well. You know, I know the kind of system she's looking to run and the way she's handling things, and I think you know, they're probably going through the growing pains of a change of system, a change of head coach, but there's no doubt they have talent in that gym. So I think it's going to be probably the toughest weekend we've faced in terms of both matches. I think NAU, SCU, I would put that way, but, you know, both matches this week are going to be pretty tough. So it's going to be a great challenge for us to give us a test of where we're at.
You said you tweeted it out that SOU game was a big teaching moment for your team.
Yeah.
What did you learn out of it?
You know, we've got to control what we can on our side. I think for me, you know, personally, I think there's more control I can have over myself and my emotions. I think I got caught up in a couple of refereeing decisions it caused me to have a lack of clarity in helping us execute offensively. And then also for the team, you know, like I alluded to earlier, that a big win against NAU, we've got to go in with that same mindset against SU. I think Unfortunately, whatever you do in history has an impact on what you do in the future. You know, you have a mindset of, oh, we've beaten SCU three out of the last four times, so hey, let's go in SCU and we're going to beat them. Not the case at all, of course. You know, you got to take every team for their merits on the night. And we never had that conversation. We got into each other a little bit in our scouting meeting about, you know, I made it really clear we've got to take them and at their merit for who they are this year, not who they have been. And yet, you know, everybody on the team identified afterwards, yeah, we're a little bit more relaxed than we were against NAU. We're a little bit, you know, riding the high of NAU a little bit longer than we should have. And, you know, that's the part of the evolution of the program, evolution of the team, is we have to learn how to deal with that.
Wins over teams like NAU, Idaho, how kind of nice is that sort of tangible evidence that, you know, the program is going in the right direction?
It's great. I mean, I think it's a real encouragement for us as a coaching staff, but I think most importantly, it's evidence, you know, it's like hard evidence to the team that what we're doing is paying off. You know, the work they did over the summer is paying off. The physical condition they're in is paying off. The number of times I looked through the net, I mean, NAU are a little obnoxious with their 7,000 feet warning sign, you know, effects of altitude and this kind of thing. And then the number of times I looked through the net after a long rally, and their players are hunched over, hands on knees, kind of gasping for air, and our players are like shoulders back, pumped, ready to go, was like, yeah. I mean, Alex Jardine has done a phenomenal job getting us in shape. I think Brittany Patera has done an enormous job for us, helping us with our nutrition management. And so I look at our group, and they know they're there. They know they're ready to play. They know that they have everything they need to execute. And when you get the result, it just helps reinforce all of that. So it's great.
when you get to this point of the season, like six games in,
yeah.
How do you think the league is sort of shaping up?
It's a mess right now. Yeah, it really is. I mean, you've got, I think it's three or four teams tied for second at 4-2, us being one of them, which is great. I think you got UNC who've kind of stretched it out 6-0 and undefeated in league play, and rightly so. I think, you know, they are proving to be the best team in the league right now. But then, like I said, I think you've got teams like Idaho who are still finding their feet. I think you got Weber State who, for whatever reason, are where they are in terms of results. And you know, and then you got Montana who's going out there and doing a really good job against NAU, taking them to 5. And you got NAU have got some long-term injury issues. So it's going to be really interesting. I think the fun part about coaching volleyball in the Big Sky is it's you feel like you can win every night. The hard part is winning every night. And UNC's kind of figured that out so far, and you know the rest of us are finding our way a little bit. But I'd much rather be 4-2 than 2-4. I'll tell you that.
And then do you look at this weekend as a chance to kind of maybe separate a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, and that's what I felt about Saturday at SU. If we'd come out and been 5-1, then we're clear in second. You know, and again, if we're able to get a couple of victories this weekend, yeah, we'll separate ourselves a little bit more, which would be great. Certainly not taking for granted that's going to happen. We're going to have to earn every point, but that, from a, you know, imaginary standpoint, I guess, yeah, it's great.
Every week in here, we talk about Rissa.
Yeah.
And watching her play this week,
oh, man,
she has some huge numbers, and she looked like she had totally stepped up her game. Do you think once she got the school record that she's just playing all loosey-goosey? I mean, she was taking some shots and picking everything up.
Yeah, I mean, NAU, she was huge. You know, it took her a minute. I think Aiken at NAU is a legitimate, you know, middle blocker. I mean, she could play anywhere, do anything she wants. And it took a minute for Rizzo to figure her out, probably the first set and a half. But once she figured her out, Rizzo just ate her up. And then I think Davis on the right side there hit a really heavy ball, and I've got visions of Rizzo just being stuck on the line there, just digging her and almost saying, "Yeah, bring it," you know. And yeah, she's certainly finding her groove, you know. And again, it's one of those sweet things where I think she's fourth in the nation right now, Tom, and seventh all time in Big Sky, and you know she's continuing to set records every weekend. To go out in a four set match against SU and get 31 digs, almost 8%, just ridiculous. You know, and then to be getting in the holes that she does against NAU, we don't win that match without Rizzo, there's no doubt about it. And so we know that we've got a very special athlete on our hands. And again, I think just for everybody who's watching or listening, I mean, for her to have the perspective for her that she practiced last week for 25 minutes because she's in hospital, because she's in class, and yet she's doing what she's doing. I mean, you talk about a true student athlete. Just an incredible kid, and you know, we had a long day of travel yesterday, and we had 4-hour layover in Denver, and what are all of the girls doing, including Rizzo? They're working on their homework for 4 hours in Denver Airport after getting up at 4 a.m. to get a flight out of St. George. I mean, talk about a dedicated group of student athletes, and like we talked about a minute ago, I couldn't be more happy that they're getting the results on the court for their hard work, because their hard work is all the stuff that people don't see. What people see is the results on a Saturday or Thursday. But yeah, Rizzo leads the charge in that. She's the leader of the team. There's no doubt about it. And everyone follows behind her. So it's pretty cool when she's able to do it.
How do you think the libero position has maybe revolutionized it? It's been a while since it's been a part of the game. But
yeah, I mean, it's really significant. I mean, I think when I look at building a roster, the two positions that I think if we can be really good at, we have a chance to be great, is libero and setter. If you have a first contact and a second contact that really are masters of their craft, then you've got a chance to be at the top of the conference. And I think what we've got in Rizzo is the number 4 libero in the country. And all of Division I volleyball, not splitting it up, Power 5, Group of 5, anything like that. All of Division I, we've got one of the best liberos in the country. So without a doubt, the best libero in the conference. And when you've got someone who's a master of their craft that way, it really just gives you the start you need. You know, we talk about the first contact, whether it's the serve or the pass or the dig. And she's just great at all of them. And it sets us up for success. So it's significant, the change it's made to the game, there's no doubt.
With football on a bye, don't forget Friday night is your first opportunity to check out both the men's and women's basketball squads, as it's late night at the Brick, starting at 6 p.m. with the women's team scrimmage, followed by skills competitions between the two teams, and then the men take the floor to cap the night off. There is also Bobcat volleyball on Thursday and Saturday night inside Schroyer Gymnasium with Weber State and Idaho State in town. So make sure to head out to Schroyer to help support Montana State Athletics. Once again, Bobcat Nation, we thank you for making phase one of the 20-year plan a reality, as without you, this project doesn't happen. We'll return next Tuesday with another edition of the Bobcat Insider. As always, thanks again for listening.
Been listening to the Bobcat Insider. Be sure to stay up to date with all things Montana State Athletics by visiting msubobcats.com and by following the Cats on social media on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram using the handle msubobcats. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Bobcats Sports Network.